Hi, and welcome to the Soul Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Kat Fowler, and today we have a very special guest on the show who is a pioneer in the consciousness movement and through his own awakening has had some amazing truths that he can share with us hopefully today to inspire your awakening as well. So Joe Martino is the founder of Collective Evolution, a conscious news and education platform that's evolving the way that news and media is told. Joe has put his deep knowing that change starts within into the formula by which Collective Evolution creates its news and media content. He inspires people to get in touch with who they truly are in order to move into a space of authenticity within themselves. And this is really what I believe is true empowerment. Joe does all of this through his media work, podcast, courses, and original shows on CETV. So thank you so much, Joe, for being on the show with us today.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So when I was thinking of a title for this episode, I had so many ideas, but I figured to keep it simple and approachable, I'd call it What's Really Going On in the World Today, all caps with really.
So we now certainly talk about that a bit.
Yes. So this is a really broad topic and this podcast is all about spirituality and healing. So in that scope, I'd like to talk about just the hidden state of the world that so many people are slowly waking up to and the process of deep inner work that you really have to go through individually once you discover these truths. And you're a pioneer and an expert in this topic, and it's a really big topic. So let's get started with how you started to wake up or discover some of these truths yourself. And then why and when you decided to make this your life's mission to spread this knowledge.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, my journey goes back to when I was younger, and I'll sort of preface the story a little bit by just saying that a lot of the stuff that, you know, we seek when we're doing various work to, whether it's different practices and spirituality and so forth to sort of find greater peace within ourselves, it's almost like we're diving into programs and belief systems that we have about ourselves. Now, when we talk about what's going on in the world, it's really just taking that within each of us and extrapolating it out into what's happening in the world. And so all the things that go on in our world that we're now trying to understand is really just a reflection, a representation of all the shadows that we have within ourselves individually. So, you know, like a lot of people, when I was young and I was going through education system and all that sort of stuff, for me, I looked around at a lot of the things and I had all those innocent sort of curious questions. Like, you know, my parents were watching the news and you'd see all this stuff going on and you'd be like, well, hold on, why is that happening that way? Or like, but can't we just like feed those people that are struggling? Or can't we just like provide these resources to these people? Or can't we just like get together and talk and not fight? Like, you know, when you're young, you see things in this manner. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was always, oh, well, you know, that's kind of the way the world is, Joe. It's not that simple. You know, you can't just, you know, feed people if they're in a different country. It's just not how the system works. That's not how that went. So I was like, okay, you know, and I grew up and I got older. And as I got older, I started to ask deeper questions about what those feelings were and what I saw in the world. And it was hard for me, as it is for, you know, a lot of people, but we do it anyway. It was hard to accept that the world just was the way it is and we're supposed to just kind of find our place within it, you know, get our job and just kind of do our thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I searched and it eventually it came to a breaking point for me when I was in college, where I was attempting to just really just say, hey, you know what? I'm just gonna do it. I'm gonna get this job in engineering. And at one point I went from engineering to business, and then I went from business to music production. I was just trying to do the average thing that we're sort of expected to do. And I hit this breaking point where I became fairly down and depressed, and I was seeing a psychologist to talk about things and all that sort of stuff. And she said to me, she goes, why don't you just do what you want to do in life as opposed to what everyone else wants you to do? Hmm. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I can do that? And, you know, because you're never really given that permission directly a lot of the times. Now, right. Some people have different upbringings and they're, you know, it's pushed a little bit differently. But for me, it was like, I was never just told that I could do that. It was always just, you know, listen to authority. You got to do it this way. Listen to the older people. Listen to what teachers are saying. Listen. Okay. So, you know, eventually I, when I heard that from her, I dropped out of school literally 30 minutes after that presentation or that little meeting we had there.
Wow.
So I go to the college, I get my withdrawal papers, wow, and I was done. And from there, my life sort of, again, from this, what people might call a, you know, almost like a spiritual awakening perspective, from almost like my path changed, if you want to look at it that way. I suddenly was opening up experiences where I had met someone who was perfect for what I needed to hear after I made that decision. It was someone who helped me explore more so those feelings that I had when I was a kid. Why is the world the way it is? Why do I not want to fit into society this way? Why did I have feelings of depression and anxiety when I thought about it? You know, why do I see certain things in the world the way I see them? And being able to talk to someone who was older than me, but with the openness to talk about these things in a way that wasn't just about pushing everything back to this, just focus, get a job and do your thing. That allowed me to really expand and expand not only my consciousness, but my way of seeing the world and myself and understanding it. And through that, I had this liberating feeling of not only having a reassurance or a confirmation of that what I saw in the world and the way it was didn't have to be that way, and having other people confirm that you're right in what you're seeing, but we're just kind of accepting it all the time. We're just accepting. And so having that confirmation and then being able to say, okay, well, this really, I'm seeing how much change is happening within myself. The more I do inner work, the more I address the different programs, belief systems, and shadows and so forth within myself that I've experienced up to this point in my life, I'm realizing, wow, I'm suddenly like, I'm free. I feel completely different than I did, you know, weeks prior when I was just following along and just kind of being a, you know, a good little cog in the machine, if you want to call it that way. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that journey led me to, I need to share this with other people. I need to, even if it's, you know, just a few people, I need to write about my story and my experiences, because there's got to be a ton of other people out there that are having these thoughts. And so that's kind of how Collective Evolution was born. It was just this idea of, at first, it was like a blog. I was sharing mostly multiple times a day my feelings and my observations about what was going on in the world. But instead of having this sort of angry, judgmental, I've been deceived my whole life sort of, you know, position to it, it was always from the position of, that experience allowed me to see things and allowed me to grow. And so we can all look at the world in this manner. So this is what we call our neutral tone that we've put into Collective Evolution, where it's this non-judgmental tone of being able to look at what's happening in our world and really ask the question, why is it happening that way? So, you know, it was those experiences that really led to how Collective Evolution was born.
Okay, so a few things. You guys have been around for a while, right? Like about 7 years, 5 years?
We're coming up on 10. I think our public information might say 7 or so, but we're coming up on 10 in June.
Wow. Yeah, because I remember long, long time ago, I would share your articles. I would email your articles. It's so funny. I have no idea who's behind this. It's amazing that we're chatting now. But I would literally share the Collective Evolution blogs because they're about everything, you know, specific things and just all sorts of topics with my family or with my friends through email at the time. That's incredible. So I think it's just very serendipitous that we're on this chat. But something else that you brought up that I think is really interesting is coming from that neutral perspective does really take a lot of inner work to get there. And that doesn't happen like on day one of finding out all of these things. Like, you know, like you said, you had this whole process and luckily you had a person that was helping you along that journey. Because I feel like what I see is a lot of people really get stuck in the anger. I've been there, and I'm saying this from experience, not like I'm better than that. Like, I've been through that, like, oh, we've been deceived, I'm angry at the world, this, and that. So can you talk about what you were saying, how when you started seeing these truths in the world, you started to see them within yourself? Because that can be a leap that I think a lot of people might have trouble making.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the ways I like to relate this is I really, you know, some people will ask or they'll explore, okay, you know, what type of truths are we talking about? You know, what, when we look at our world, we oftentimes can understand things, for example, like corruption within business, right? We might watch something on the news and you find out that a corporation or even a politician sort of misled or lied to people in a way that allowed them to sort of increase their profits or increase their position in a political race or something like that. And we accept those as like, okay, well, that's something that goes on, and I understand that. And then, sometimes we hear about things like organized crime, for example, like, oh, okay, so these people are coordinating and coming together as a mafia, let's say, or as a biker gang or whatever however we like to associate organized crime. And they do things that sort of jump around some legal loopholes, or that don't necessarily overtly in the street harm people, but they're making money, what you would say, illegally. And so we look at those things and we understand those as like corrupt things or different things going on in the world. What we often don't realize is, and this is where the research led and this is where the understanding led, is that type of stuff, that very just everyday type of stuff, goes on in government and goes on in corporations that, deal with various things like our health and our wellness and so forth at higher levels, food production, all these sorts of things, where, even regulation, when we're talking about government, of these things has this sort of organized crime sort of mix into it, where the people are in essence being taken advantage of to some extent, not in every single, thing that happens in the world, but in a lot of things. And the evidence is there to show that. And what that shows is that as humanity, when you really look at the basic form of that, we seem to exist in this state of being where we think about taking care of ourselves. We're caught up in this sort of division where my survival, my sustenance is more important than the other factors that are involved within the human experience, which is like connection with nature, connection with others, connection with the longevity of something or the longevity of people, based on the stuff that I'm creating. So it really to see what's happening in the world and relating it to what's happening within ourselves is about just thinking about where have I done things where I'm sort of taking advantage of a situation or trying to strategize in a way that unknowingly is going to leave the other person in a situation that's not so good, or but mine's a little better. Where have I tried to manipulate somebody? Where have I tried to deceive somebody? Where has my unconsciousness ultimately about my actions unknowingly sort of created disconnection or harm to other people in a way, right? The core idea is that in a lot of ways, our lack of consciousness, our lack of connection, not only between ourselves to our higher selves, but to how that connects with all other people on the and on the planet and the decisions we make, where we're existing from a space of authenticity. This is the underlying thing that when we get into this space and we're existing within that state of being, we see a lot more clearly not only where our actions are coming from, but where other people's actions are coming from. And so when talking about learning the truths of what's happening in the world, it's almost like this. When you can do the mental research where you're gaining the information from the mind point of view, and you're saying, okay, all right, I see what's going on. There's a ton of stuff to back up this particular thing. Great. Wow, why would somebody do that? Now I'm angry and now I'm upset and all that sort of, I see what's going on. This is annoying me, right? Like I feel deceived. And that's an interesting part of the process because you have to ask yourself, well, why am I getting angry about it? What makes me mad about the fact that these people are actually doing this, right? And it for every person, it's a bevy of things. It could be different. It could be for me, I went through a very, very small anger phase where it was more like I was just more so like upset that they were hiding it, that they were hiding the manipulation of certain things. Whereas when I actually learned that a lot of things were going on and that there was groups of individuals in essence involved in organized crime that involved a lot of the planet, I actually was relieved, interestingly enough. I had this feeling of relief where I was like, okay, I don't feel as worried about the fact that humanity ended up in this place because it was purposely pushed to this manner where we're disconnected, where we're divided, where we're, enslaved by a debt-based financial system, for example, and so forth. Like, it wasn't just a natural evolution of humanity's ideas that led us here. It was the purposeful suppression of consciousness, of ideas, of mm-hmm. keeping people in these states. So when we go to this mode of learning about and seeing what's going on, it's actually an opportunity to become empowered, so long as we move past the anger and the judgment of everything that's happened, right? And so I don't know if that entirely answers the question. There's a number of different things. It's pretty loaded what I said there in a sense.
But... No, it's great. And I think I love how you're saying everyone's response will differ, because it really just depends. Like a trauma survivor might have a very different reaction to hearing some of the things that happen to children in the world than somebody, you know, that hasn't had that. And so they have to, it's this aspect of shadow work, that, if you want to call it that, or just dealing with that unconscious, what lies within you that you haven't healed yet, that really does come up through the external stimuli of what you're reading about or what you hear about in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's kind of like what I think a lot of people have the opportunity to do now is, you know, people feel as though we're in a almost like a state of chaos where we're looking around at the world and it's like, it depends. It depends too on what you're looking at, right? Some people will live in different, we'll say size bubbles or even different bubbles where it's like, oh, well, I kind of just focus on this stuff on social media or in my friend circles and so forth. And so I never really see that, you know, for example, the media takes people in certain directions of hysteria, where it's like we're pushing for, mm-hmm. You know, really strong race divides or really strong PC culture or different things that are happening in the fabric of our society that are pushing people to become so divided, right? Totally. Some people, it depends on what we're paying attention to. But when you look at this overall collective story that's sort of building out, and even if we just want to focus for a moment at what's happening so much in North America, because there's a lot of focus on that right now, especially through Trump's presidency, for example, is we're seeing all these potential shadows coming forward to collective consciousness that gives us an opportunity to talk and have a discussion, right? So whether or not it's stuff about how we view gender equality, whether it's stuff about how we view victimhood, whether it's stuff about how we view race division, whether it's stuff about how we view race pride, stuff about how we view political party division and how we identify so strongly with that kind of stuff, all of these conversations, all of these issues that come up that become news headlines, that become, you know, these very interesting stories are not just about, okay, you put out the headline, you tell the story and everybody gets mad and then everybody holds on to their position. It's why are we so upset? Why are we so enraged? Why is there so much chaos? Why are we holding on dearly to our position, to our story, to our identity, it pushes us to see so strongly the belief systems and the patterns that we operate off of, mm-hmm. and says, okay, wait, who truly am I? Am I really the color of my skin? Is our world really that divided in society based on color of skin? Is it even based that heavily on gender? Why am I getting so caught up in all of that kind of stuff, right? Why am I putting so much energy into it, right? And it forces us to ask ourselves who we truly are, providing that we're actually given the opportunity to ask those things. And this is why we do what we do at CE is our thing is not about, okay, well, this is happening. Let's go find who's right and who's wrong all the time. It's like, okay, well, these things are happening and these are usually things that are of social opinion or that are, you know, this is what my traditions or my culture says and therefore we need to do it this way. And we're pushing all these ideas onto people. But it's like, well, hold on. Is what we're capable of truly just limited to one cultural idea or one traditional idea or mm-hmm. one belief system about how things are supposed to be? Mm-hmm. Why are we creating all of these free speech laws, for example, where we're so terrified, and this is one of my favorite examples, we're trying to tell people, you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't put out this information, this can't be there, this can't happen, blah, 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 because ultimately what that's saying is you can't, if someone says something and it hurts my feelings, that shouldn't be allowed.
Oh, that's well, the PC, yeah, that's the PC culture. Mm-hmm.
Right, and it's like, well, why does it hurt your feelings? you know, people have asked me all the time, well, you know, with your position and what you're doing with Collective Evolution and being out there a lot and all that sort of stuff online, you must get a lot of people who hate you or say things. It must be hard. And I say, and yeah, I mean, not that many people say a lot of stuff, but when people do, it's a name. They call me a whatever. And it's like, it's a name. Why do I let that bug me? That's their perception of what they're saying. If I read every one that comes up, or I listen to what some people say, and I say, okay, well, is this true within myself? Am I actually being what this person might be suggesting that's critical of my work? Oh, yes or no. And sometimes people just call names. And I just, okay, it's a name. I have to hold the in essence, the gasoline that gets blown up when mm-hmm. someone comes with a match to say, hey, here's, you know, I'm going to call you a name. If I don't hold on to that gasoline, I'm not blowing up, right? Mm-hmm. And that was an example my mentor, you know, told me a long time ago, which really was just about this idea of why do we allow other people all the time to dictate our feelings, to dictate our emotions, you know? And these are the things, these are the types of reflections that come up with things like PC culture, with, you know, free speech. What mm-hmm. is free speech? Why are they, for example, banning vaccination films that talk about questioning vaccines? Why are they banning that from platforms? You got to think, it's like, okay, well, let's say...
Well, a lot of people don't even know they're banning things because they just, it doesn't even reach them on time. So I think that's a huge thing that people are starting to find out, the mass censorship that's going on a huge level for many different topics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And with the vaccines, it's interesting because it's like, is there supposed to be a parent figure that tells you what you can and cannot know and what you can and cannot discern for yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we should be in a position where we learn self-responsibility. We learn to look at information and discern for ourselves versus having a parent tell us, you know, what's right and what's wrong. And these are the interesting underlying questions and factors that when we look at what happens in our society, we ask ourselves, like, okay, well, what is the cause? Why is there people even trying to ban this stuff? Mm-hmm. What on each level does that affect? Well, on some levels, it's saying we don't want to reveal, you know, the nefarious nature of the science that we've hid that clearly illustrate a danger with vaccinations, and it's not safe for everybody. We can't have people know that is widespread and that's true. So that's one layer of it. The other layer of it is we need to protect our business and our profits and who this employs and so forth. And this is what this is all about. You know, that's another layer. The other layer is you keep going deeper, right? It's like eventually it asks the question of like, why are we allowing regulators and other people to tell us what we can and cannot see in terms of information? What does that say about us as individuals? What is that challenging us to do? It's really saying we need to take our health into our own hands more. We need to take our information into our own hands. We need to kind of look and discern information and really become self-responsible in how we make decisions. And so with everything, there's so many layers to how we need to start looking at things, but we need media that's going to approach that in that manner versus just, here's what happened and here's how you should think about it. You know?
Right. And that's why I love so much what you guys do, because it addresses that subconscious or that spiritual layer of, okay, what does that mean for me? And I think a lot of people get lost when their sense of identity is challenged, when they have to think about, where did this belief that I have originate? Is it from me? And if it's not, is it really who I am? And then a lot of times when that starts to crumble, when you learn these truths, then comes this like abyss of, well, who really am I? And that's a whole journey on it. This is the spiritual awakening for a lot of people. And it can happen from so many different things. But in this sense, when they start to learn these truths, it, for me at least, was a whole nother layer of awakening that happened. And it happened through media like yours, and David Wilcock was a huge inspiration when watching his shows. I remember just being like mouth open, like, is this real, for a very long time. And then I was like, oh, it's real. I've met people who can vouch for these things. And it's really incredible. But it's this inner journey that you have to go through of deprogramming yourself from everything that you've learned or that you've been taught you have to do or believe, that comes from this. It comes from these truths that you unveil. And you guys do such a good job at saying, okay, this is what it may mean. Because I think even though you've figured that out, let's say with the vaccine example, it might take somebody a long time to look at themselves, because it takes people, it's a lot harder to look at ourselves than it is for us to look at other people or what's going on in the world.
Absolutely. And you know, this is what's so beautiful about it, is the idea of helping to create a culture where, again, this is not about, I mean, I think a lot of times when people think about conspiracies, and I, you know, I'm not trying to knock anybody here, but when they think about conspiracies, sometimes they'll just assume like, oh, well, it just involves like sort of that classic tinfoil hat wearing, probably Alex Jones listening, right? And to me, I have no issues with Alex and what he does. Yes, he sometimes is overboard with the way he reacts, and that's his character and that's what he does, and it's not entirely my cup of tea, but I can't take away from the guy that he has revealed some information that has been very helpful to people, other information that has maybe pushed people down a path of very extreme anger, very extreme disconnection. And guess what? That's a spiritual journey too that those people are going to have to come out of. But I think the thing that's interesting is when we encourage this culture within media, and that's really about, okay, asking the deeper questions, what does this mean? How can I explore this? What is this about? It starts to give us this opportunity to just ask, like you were saying, what are the things that bother me about this particular situation? And when it comes to vaccines, as just an example, because we've been continuing with this one a little bit, it's like, you know, we have to consider that it can be scary to look at vaccine information. I have friends, for example, right now, you know, who are about to have a child, and they ask me questions like, hey, you know, I'm really considering this. And I never, with all the information I know and with all the information I present, I've never told a single soul to not vaccinate. I say, look at the information and you discern for yourself what you feel that you need to do. Mm-hmm. But here's the information, because it's about knowing in every situation in life what you want to put your energy to and what we collectively want to create, because us as individuals is what makes up the collective. And if we're just accepting things that very obviously have a completely different story to them without being told that other story, then we're never going to be pushed towards this opportunity to become truly self-responsible. We're always going to push a lot of life responsibility away to government, to regulatory bodies, to corporations and so forth, who are essentially making decisions based on profit and based on having control over people. And that is just a state of disconnection that humanity's consciousness is in, which again is not necessarily to be judged as, oh my God, we're so disconnected, this is so bad. It's to look at it and say, we're operating in a state of disconnection. If we really, really deeply look at the way industry operates, the way education operates, the way healthcare operates, the way the food system operates, government, politics, everything, we just ask the question, do we want to play like this anymore? Is this something that I want to put my energy into? Is this resonating with my heart? Is it resonating with how I want to live and what I think is possible for humanity? And if it's not, then we got to start breaking down the illusion of what we think our reality is. And that's, to us, that's step one. Mm-hmm.
I think that's really what's hard for people to understand, because a lot of that can sound hippy dippy, where they're like, oh, you don't like it? Well, you can't do anything about it anyway. There's that kind of misconception out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, the way we, you know, do our media and the way we approach this kind of stuff is, we have a protocol at CE. I'm not sure if you have a chance to see it at any point, but I've been pushing this like crazy, because we did it in our hearts and in our minds this 10 years, but we just decided to release it publicly because it was like, it's funny. I actually had a dream about this last night. Someone in my dream said, you know, I really like what you guys are doing at CE, but I don't think a lot of people recognize truly what you're doing. And I'm like, what do you mean? You know, and they're like, well, I don't think they see that, you know, you're not just like a conspiracy site. You're not like just a spiritual site. You're doing something that's like, it mixes everything together. And I don't think people see that. And I'm like, really?
That is funny.
Right. And so it's like the protocol is really, it's this thing where it's how we think about our stories. It's how we think about how to grow and evolve a human being through what they're learning around them. One thing that this sort of stems off of is the idea of, you know, some people will look at spirituality and their wellness, and then some people will look at what goes on in the world or life, and they're separate things. You know, their work might be part of that, and it's all separate. Whereas we say, okay, no, none of this is separate. your existence on this planet and the way you see reality and the way you exist within your reality and the food you consume and the water you consume and the job choices that you make and the way you interact with your friends and the relationships that you have and the way you move into those relationships and operate within those relationships are all part of this thing called life. It's all part of this human experience. There is no separation from spirituality and the physical world. It's all part of it. And there are foundations to that that, for example, consciousness and the way we perceive things as a collective, so as a whole, all of the humans and the souls that are experiencing this planet right now, when we buy into a specific idea, we collectively create that idea. So if, yes, for example, we're currently in a shared state of disconnection where it's like we're very disconnected from nature, we're very disconnected from stuff. We see a lot of people wanting to become more connected to a lot of these things now. But if we're disconnected from all these things, well, that's part of what we're experiencing on the planet as we co-create our reality right now. So the reality of the situation is if that's what's happening, right, and that's what's being created, then we have to get into a mode where we can understand that. So we need to see how our consciousness is affecting our reality, not just, oh, I leave consciousness in one corner and then I talk about, you know, work and business in another corner, and they cannot be talked about together. You know, mm-hmm, what I'm saying? We don't approach things that way. It's like, this is all a reflection, so we got to look at it, and we can't bury our heads in the sand. And that burying your head in the sand doesn't mean like, oh my God, you're just trying to stay ignorant and we should judge people who do that. It's what makes you want to put your head in the sand and not explore things. It's like when you're in high school and you have to break up with your first boyfriend or girlfriend and you're like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to make a call because it's nerve-wracking, right? But you eventually have to do it.
Yeah.
This is exactly the same. There's no difference. We eventually have to get to a state where we grow up within ourselves and we say, hey, what is going on in our world? Because it's getting to be very obvious that something's up and that there's a lot of things going on that we got to pay attention to. And so the way the protocol is designed is four steps, and I'll go through them just briefly. Mm-hmm. It's step one is breaking the illusion. Step two is awakening neutrality. Step three is deprogramming the limits. And then step four is living in alignment. Mm-hmm. Now, what this is a protocol, is a way of going about things in understanding our reality and in living our lives that allows us to actually change as a person and affect collective consciousness, but also act in a way that is congruent with living true to your heart. So what that means is when we break the illusion, what we're doing is we're destroying this idea of what we thought our reality was, and all of the various different little lies and manipulations that we've been told along the way that are very obviously evident when we actually take the time to look at it, right? Mm-hmm. And the purpose of that is so that we start to realize, like, okay, wait a minute, yeah, things are a little different. And we got it. It's like in the Matrix. Neo learns that, okay, things weren't what I thought. And he has this mode where he's like breaking down. He's like, whoa, hold on. You know, he throws up. He's like, what mm-hmm. is reality? All that sort of stuff. And he starts having those questions. Awakening neutrality is, okay, don't get caught up in the state of hyper emotions or hyper sides. And you're trying to pick up, okay, I'm either on this side or I'm on this side. Don't worry about all that. Look at things from a neutral point of view. Why are things playing out the way they're playing out? What is happening in a deeper sense of what's going on? And let's not pull ourselves into political parties and let's not try and divide everything, because that's not the underlying thing of what's going on anyway. So we pull this neutrality point of view where it's like non-duality. That's one term that's discussed a lot. Mm-hmm. And then you go into step three, which is deprogramming the limits. So it's like, okay, well, I realize that I've broken the illusion that my world wasn't the way it was. So I now need to deprogram all of the things that world told me in terms of how things need to be. So I grew up in a system that told me, you just got to go to school, keep your head down, work hard, then go and you got to make money. And then it has to be like this. And then you have to go and you have to get a house and you have to live this way. And through all of that, you're judged by your grades. You're judged by how you look. You're judged by your weight. You're judged by all these different things that we pushed within our reality. You know, you may feel hopeless. You may feel worthless. You may feel all these different things. But then beyond that, it's the world has to operate this way. We need money. We need to be disconnected by countries, and we need to have these little individual lines that are borders. So all of these belief systems, all of these ideas that this world in the state of this is how it has to be has taught us, we need to now deprogram and say, okay, does it actually have to be this way? And we start letting go of this stuff. And this is where we get into some spiritual work. We get into some deprogramming. We get into, you know, getting into, okay, I'm now starting to place in the personal development realm and say, really, where have I limited myself? Where have I told myself something has to be this way? Where am I following stories of success that really, and dreams that really have nothing to do with my dreams, but have to do with the dreams of society? Well, society told me that I'm going to feel good when I finally make $100,000 a year. And so my dream is to make $100,000 a year as an artist. But like, whose dream really is that? Is that yours? Where did that come from? Mm-hmm. Right. And so these are the deprogramming, the limits that we start to look at. And then the last step there, step four, is living in alignment. This is where we start saying, okay, we now have to practice this. We need to put it into a practice, because, yeah, it's not enough to just say, oh, well, you know, it's all, we're all one anyway. Let's just sit back and it'll all be fine. You know, no, we got to get into the state of living in alignment. This is where the consciousness meets the road, meets the pavement, and hits and starts creating all the action. And so living in alignment is about a five day process that starts a journey of starting to go within, of starting to face in a very practical way some of these belief systems about yourself, some of these different limiting beliefs about yourself. It starts practicing presence. It starts practicing the idea of self-awareness and self-responsibility and seeing how you interact with the environment around you. And there's a number of different little exercises that allow us, that help us to do that, which can be extrapolated out and be used, you know, throughout life. The idea is this last step is about creating an everyday consciousness that is more fluid, that is more present, is more connected to the heart, is more authentic, and that is ultimately more you, beyond all the belief systems, programs, and limits and so forth that we've accepted from the reality that we were sort of fed, right? And so the protocol in totality is a way to actually bring action to this entire process. And we do that through media, as well as through, you know, the sort of the little course that we have that's in step four there. Mm-hmm. So I know I just kind of just dropped a whole bunch there, but
that was so good. I'm like, I have about like 8 different things that I wanted to talk on from that one answer. So
okay.
Number one, The Matrix, amazing. That's a documentary. It's just, I love that you referred to that. Mm-hmm. Number two, the C protocol. What I love about it is it's really like short, quick videos. So if anyone's interested in really diving into it, your videos are like 7 minutes each, some are 10 minutes, and it's just describing what you just talked about, but in depth in each step, and highly recommend checking that out. And then I think you have that 5-day challenge, right, that you've put up.
Yeah, that one is essentially in step four there, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so some bigger things that I wanted to touch on was the word conspiracy, because that's come mm-hmm. up a few times. All right, let's dive into that, because I think that is an immediate shutdown for people, where if they hear something that is potentially true about the world, but then they Google it and Snopes.com or whatever, the first thing that comes up is conspiracy, that immediately yeah. people are like, oh, well, it's not real. So can you talk about why the word conspiracy comes up a lot and what that really means and why that's meant to really it's engineered to have us look away from what's really happening.
For sure. And I think it's interesting when you said the word engineered, because, you know, there is part of that involved. And again, I'll sort of preface this a little bit by saying we have sort of been a black sheep, even within the alternative media space or the independent media space, in the little sort of community of many, many websites that have existed over the past, you know, 3, 4 years, 5 years that explore a lot of alternative truths and conspiracy or alternative media. We've been a black sheep because we, you know, have always pushed for, look, if the evidence is not strong or it's not there, or if we're pushing for stories about things that are, you know, conspiracies that it, where it's, you know, you really have not a lot of reason to really talk about it, we avoid it. We don't talk about it until there's enough for us to say, hey, there's a story here. There's something to talk about. And so to go into that and just sort of relate it with the Snopes thing a little bit, I have to wholeheartedly admit that within this alternative media space, there has been over the years a good chunk of fake news or a good chunk of stories that have come out that Yeah, it makes it really easy for Snopes to jump in there and say, this is fake, because it is fake, right? And so what this comes down to is a nuanced conversation of, again, going back to not dividing everything into, okay, well, it's mainstream media and then it's alternative. And so one is real and one is not, or this or that. You know, it's really this idea of, okay, yes, there's been a lot of fake news and stuff. The mainstream media has been very guilty of that as well. This is really about, okay, can we look at what's going on in our world that we call quote unquote conspiracies, because we're going to get into the explanation of that in a second. But can we look at these things and not just shut it off culturally as, well, this is probably just not true because there's been other stories that have tainted the well when it comes to what conspiracies or what thinking outside the box is really about. Mm-hmm. So the word conspiracy, I mean, people argue that it sort of was a creation of various control structures to kind of like put something to debunk very easily and very quickly certain stories so people wouldn't question it. And it was almost like this derogatory term in a sense that just made people kind of go, nah, and brush it off. Mm-hmm. The origin of the word, I mean, I've looked into this a bit. I can't entirely say, you know, whether or not that's true. I can say, though, that a conspiracy is really just something where it's like people are conspiring to do something without publicly or without, you know, very obviously stating that that's what's going on. So it's like, you know, we're going to fully, for example, we're going to take over the government as the military. So we're going to conspire together to do it so the government doesn't know. And then eventually it'll happen. You know, that's really all conspiracy is. But how has that become this derogatory term? Well, the media, film, music, and so forth have combined the reality that there are some people who are very over the top with conspiracies, that are very paranoid, that believe every single thing that constantly happens is a conspiracy, mm-hmm. and that, you know, I may have antisocial tendencies, all these different things. They've taken some of the reality that there are some people like that, and they've mixed it with creating this entire culture of that's how everybody who questions anything that the government says is now a conspiracy. And so they've engineered this idea, this culture of, well, conspiracies are a joke. If you think about this stuff, it's silly. And, you know, every time now they just say it in the media, it's like, oh, well, it's just a conspiracy.
Right. You know? Or so, you might be crazy for believing any of these things.
Exactly, right? And then so people, again, going back to some of the protocol stuff, it's like then people hear, well, I don't want to be crazy. Well, why? I don't want to be perceived as crazy by my friends. Well, why? Because at the end of the day, I worry about what people think of me. Well, why? Because at the end of the day, I have this story that tells me somewhere within myself that I'm not entirely confident with who I am. There's something within me that is feeling disempowered. And so they're playing on the fact that people have these shadows, these stories, these belief systems, and we just use emotion, a manipulation of emotion as opposed to facts to shut things down. And this is why it's so important that we do the inner work, because when you're at a point where you're strong within yourself, where, you know, someone else's acceptance of you per se isn't the differentiating factor as to whether or not you can look at information. Mm-hmm. Then you're empowered. And when you're just looking at something and you're afraid to talk about it, or you're in the closet, the conspiracy closet per se, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, you're not really empowered. You're just allowing a parent figure to tell you what's right and wrong.
Yes. And this is something on a more basic level, but when you say that they've mm-hmm. engineered, who is they, for those that don't know? And I'm hesitant to ask because it's almost like I feel like it's saying Voldemort in Harry Potter land. Yeah. But it's like but it's like people need to know. So who is they?
Well, they is a very sort of loaded question. And and the what I always say to people on this particular thing is, look, there's evidence that you can follow that can show who an organizing group, consortium of individuals that involve families and powerful individuals and so forth, how they are really like a deep state or like a controlling shadow government behind government. I mean, this has been mainstream for a little bit now, where there's been a lot of talk about shadow government or deep state, which is really just unelected officials that are controlling government decisions and government interests. This we see a lot too when we have people from whistleblowers and so forth from the CDC or the FDA, or you know, like in the Spider Papers, for example, was a group of 12 different doctors at the CDC that came out and said, the CDC, we're very, very concerned that the CDC is operating not based off the interests of humanity, but based off the interests of corporations. And these corporations are coming in and they're burying and changing science, and they're pushing the CDC to do certain things. CDC as a regulatory body is not, it's really just, it's in the hands of corporations. And so all we're saying when we say they is it's about these hidden unelected officials that are having impacts on our society in ways that we don't realize because we're not told about it, right? And likewise, when we start looking at things like their CIA documents that show that the CIA, for example, has relationships with and has had relationships for many, many decades now with news stations and various news networks to be able to spin and twist stories and stuff like that to protect national security and so forth, i.e. there's people that are able to come in that we have no idea relate at all to the media that are changing what the media says based on control. And then we start looking even deeper and you start saying, okay, well, there are groups of people that operate in various, you know, things like the CFR, the Bilderberg Group, and, you know, again, all this stuff is traceable, right? There's tons of information on this stuff out there that it's almost impossible to pack into a quick conversation. But you start looking at this stuff and you realize, okay, there are people who make decisions and that affect the government, that affect what countries do, well, that affect what global economies as a whole do, mm-hmm. that have nothing to do with elected officials, that have nothing to do with what society wants. So when you start to see that, when you start to understand that, and you start to think about they, and then you start to think about the examples of what has been done very evidently, what has been, you know, been going on. It's just this idea of there are people who operate from a position where they enjoy their power.
Why, for people that have no idea, what gave them this position of power? Like, who are these people? What gives them this position that they can operate in these ways? And they're a lot of the times in the shadows.
For sure. Yeah. It's a lot of times it's families that have been in power for a very, very long time, or that have held opportunities of power for a very long time. Like if you follow back a number of families that own, for example, central banking, mm-hmm. and the entire idea of, you know, fractional reserve banking, and you look at the institutions that operate, these are essentially institutions that are privately owned, that mm-hmm. are owned by various families that are essentially taking money. And they're injecting that money into society, so into government. So it's not like, you know, the finances, the money that we use every day. It's not like the government saying, all right, okay, here's the money, society, go play with it, go use it, and we're going to control interest rates and so forth. Now, this happens at a private corporation level. There's a private corporation that, well, a number of private corporations that provide the finances that this entire world uses. Mm-hmm. What that means is that there are a group of people that profit entirely off of all of the money, with the exception of a few countries that don't have central banks, that is in society or that is in the world. What gave them the right to make these decisions? What gave them the right to create the financial system as it is? What gave them the right to say that when I give money to the governments that they owe us debt in return, or they owe us interest in return? So when you break it down, this is from a very bare bones, a very everyday thing that we use, everyday money. It comes from a set of people that provide money to governments at debt that the governments then provide to the banks that then provide to the people also at debt, mm-hmm. creating this system of constant slavery, mm-hmm. of constant having to repay. The governments are just as in debt as all of, like, we're $244 trillion in debt as a planet.
Right.
Who do we owe the money to?
Right. Exactly. And what would be the subconscious or the spiritual reason that we would have given that power away in the beginning, you think, or that we're now dealing with this now, that it's coming to light now?
Yeah. I mean, it's like you look at it as like when you're playing a video game and you have these experimentations of, again, we have to go back to sort of non-dual and non-judgment for a second. We have to remember to come out of the human mind aspect of this and get back into the heart and the soul and really the fact that beyond this physical body, beyond the human experience, we're not up there as souls or as the universe. The universe doesn't judge. The universe doesn't say, well, this is right and this is wrong. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The universe, it has experiences, and that's it. It's a gamut of experiences that allow for us to have a gamut of experiences. And so the idea is similar to a video game. We have, we're going through like an experimentation of deep disconnection. What happens when I come on the planet, I enter into a body, and we play as a collective in a world where we have to work to survive. And we have people that are able to take advantage of other people, and that, you know, we don't remember who we truly are. And we really get entrenched within this deep program, this deep system that we have within our minds called the ego, which if it's okay, I would love to just say that we have a show on CETV called Elevate. In season two, we unpack the entire human experience. Like, we're talking from the body to the AI to how the mind works, you know, really what the ego is and all that sort of stuff. We dig it all apart, and that's important.
Is this on your app? I know you guys just launched.
Yeah, this is our platform called CETV. We do have apps for it and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
So the idea is it's like we have gotten very, very entrenched in the various aspects of this human experience, which, again, if we're going to yoga, if we're meditating, if we're looking at aspects of wellness, a lot of times what we talk about is, how do we connect with ourselves? How do we shut off the mind for a little bit? How do we, you know, do all this sort of stuff? And sometimes we have states where we get so deep into a meditation that we start feeling, oh, wow, I'm connected with everything. I'm in this like state of complete and utter bliss. Mm-hmm. Well, you'll notice in that state of complete and utter bliss, when you're connected to everything, that there is no judgment. There's no mind and there's no ego telling you what's right or wrong, telling you what you should or shouldn't do, and telling you who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. That all happens at the mind and the ego level, this little program that starts creating all these experiences linked to emotions and then telling you what is right and wrong, right? And then, of course, all of this too is learned behaviors that come from society and education and so forth. So in that state of pure potentiality, pure oneness, where we're connected to everything, we recognize there's no judgment. So when we look at why does this happen on the planet today, why do we have the money, we got to look at it from that point of view. Why did we create the system of, from a non-dual point of view of disconnection? Well, we get to experience how deep the disconnection goes, how lost we can get within the experience, and then pull ourselves out of that through going through an experience of deprogramming, of getting into the state of like, okay, how do I got to see what it felt like to give all my power to this little piece of paper that I then relate to how valuable I am. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a deep experience to say that money is deciding how happy or how not happy I am. We then go and we value other people's time and energy and efforts and so forth based on, okay, well, that is worth this and that is worth this and that is, and we make up this whole story called an economy that's like, okay, well, within the economy, that is worth this and that is worth, well, what does that feel like then when someone comes onto the planet with unique gifts or with different ways of seeing things and doing things, and they want to express those things? And guess what? We don't get to express those things because we live on a planet where we need to be, where we're disconnected by money, where money is our basic survival. So now I've had the experience of coming on here and saying, wow, I'm really here to express through, say, a particular form of art. But that particular form of art is not valued in the economy. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I can't make money. And therefore, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Right? Or it's very difficult to do it. I shouldn't say can't. It's very difficult to do it.
Right.
So we have these experiences of seeing what this level of disconnect, now this is from the deepest point of view, right? Seeing what this level of disconnection creates on a more everyday level, as we're discussing like today, it's really about, are we empowered really within ourselves as a society when we give our power away and we put all of our consent into a system that is dictating how a society should operate? And it's not like it's natural. It's not like the economy and money and the way business works. It's not like it's natural, right? And this was one of the big things that I was sharing at the beginning that was a huge realization for me as a kid. It's not like we came onto the planet and there was this economy and all these different things and money and debt and interest and all these things. We made it all up. It's man-made. We made all of it up. And we saw that through this whole story, guess what? There's suffering. And there's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of pain, a lot of disconnection. And so we really have the ability to tear it all down and rebuild it. But in order to do that, we got to do that from a different state of consciousness, a different state of being, because if we continue to do it, having all these shadows of, it's about me, I'm in a mode of scarcity, I'm in a mode of fear, I'm in a mode of mm-hmm. lack, mm-hmm. then guess what? We're going to create another system that's going to be exactly the same, right? So this system is reflecting a certain state of consciousness and a certain state of being that we have on the planet. Whereas when we create a new one, this is why we got to do the personal work, because it opens up a completely different creative point, as Einstein said, where it's like you can't solve a problem at the same level of consciousness that created it. We need to get to a new state of consciousness that starts authentically, not through belief systems, but authentically within your heart. When you're in that state of being where it's, you're connected to everything and it's bliss, you start creating from that state. And that's really what humanity is going through right now, is getting to that state and seeing, breaking down, wow, we've accepted a lot of things as it has to be this way, mm-hmm. when it really doesn't. Well, and there's this other state of being that's like, you know, I actually see a lot more potential, a lot more possibility here.
Yeah.
And so we need a lot of people in that state so that we can start, you know, creating that.
Yes. And I love what you were saying about money, because that just is so prevalent in our society. And what you're saying and the work that you're doing and just a lot of your other articles and videos can really help them, I think, through these concepts. And for me also, sometimes asking the questions, like the what if questions, what if tomorrow all money is obliterated, like all financial systems just go null, then what? Who has the power? Who do you value in your life? Do you still look at the people that you admire in the same way? Do you still look at yourself in the same way? And you really, when you ask these questions, you really start to see the role that something like that has an influence on yourself and your self-esteem and all of those things. But something that you really talked about a lot was the non-duality. And a lot of people that meditate and come from a spiritual perspective or a yoga perspective, they understand that. But I think what can be hard for people to understand is that non-objective view when things are so negative, or as they appear to be negative in our eyes. I think a question a lot of people might have is, how can you say, this is almost like, you know, going back to philosophy 101, but how could you say that something isn't right or wrong morally or ethically from a non-dual place? If I see harm going on in the world, if I see animals or children getting killed, how can that be neutral?
Right. It's, for me, it's all about you go back to the state within yourself and you say, when I go into that meditative state, and when I'm in this position of, and a lot of people have expressed this, whether they've been in a meditative state or whether they've had a near-death experience or mm-hmm. whether they've done psychedelics or whether they are able to access these experiences through, almost like everyday insights and so forth, that come naturally and so forth, they will say like, wow, I realized that situation that I thought was so bad actually had this. It was actually like, I agreed with the other person to do that. And I know it's hard at the mind level to say, oh my gosh, like, how is something not bad? Or how is something that's going on not negative and so forth? Well, it's like, well, to be clear, it's like, it's not that it's like we want to condone, that we want to go out there and say, like, why do I do the work I do? Well, not because I want, for example, people to continue being pedophiles. It's going, okay, someone's a pedophile. Why are they a pedophile? What happened? Mm-hmm. What within that person? So if I pull away the judgment for a second and I say, okay, in my heart, like when I'm not judging it as good or bad, in my heart, I know that we're capable of living in a world where we're not so disconnected and wanting to harm one another. I know we're capable of that. So how do we get there? So we get there by going, okay, so why is the pedophile a pedophile? What happened there? What's going on? And we start approaching a situation, like many people who work with troubled individuals or people that have, you know, different challenges going on in their lives, they approach it from an empathetic point of view. And this is sometimes something that a lot of people don't realize, is that a lot of people that already work in these fields directly with these people, they approach these people from a non-dualistic sort of empathetic point of view of where they came from and what's happening in their lives and what's going on in their minds and what's going on in their state of being that is causing them to take these actions. Because the news and the media and the way we generally talk, which comes from the news and the media, is a very strong judgmental, oh my gosh, this is a horrible thing. That's just terrible, terrible. But we never talk about really what's behind it. Mm-hmm. What's going on behind that? Why is this happening? what causes someone to do this? And when we start asking that question and we start realizing, as Annika Lucas, who I know you know, mm-hmm. has described, this is someone that has survived child sex slavery. And with, you know, obviously that means she knows pedophiles very clearly. And her direct experience with that from a non-dual point of view, which she always shares, is, yeah, these people are challenged and are in the word we might use sometimes, are broken in their own ways, have their own shadows, have their own challenges. And I use the pedophile example because it's an extreme one. And it's one that people can really look at and say, okay, well, if we hold this judgmental point of view, then we see it as wrong. We take those people, we put them in jail, and that's it. They rot in prison. Well, hold on a second. Pedophiles get out of jail.
Mm-hmm. And pedophiles, especially in our system.
Exactly. And pedophiles have challenges. And those challenges are that for somewhere within themselves, each person is unique. There's something that's creating this disconnect where they want to cause harm, or in some cases, they may not even know within the system that they're actually harming another person because they can't connect with that other person to recognize that this other person doesn't necessarily want to have happen what's going to happen, right? So how do we solve the issue? Do we solve the issue by staying in judgment, by saying this is so bad, and by saying, okay, we'll put them in prison, and then however many years later, they get worse in prison, they come out and they go and offend again, right? Or do we say, all right, we recognize we need to pull them out of society for a moment. We need to isolate them because we recognize we're not going to create a harmonious society because that's our goal, is maintain harmony, right? Not maintain like just a system of finance and commerce like we have today, but no, we want to maintain thriving harmony on the planet. So we isolate someone like a pedophile and we give them the love and the care that they require to shift. And based on conversations we're going to have as a collective, based on various different ways, we're going to at some point come to a point where we determine what it means for someone to, i.e., enter back into society when they're at a point where they feel okay. But what would that isolation look like? It's not going to be a 6x8 cell where someone's going to rot in a dark little hole. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an area where they can actually be given the environment, the love and the care and the empathy to shift, where we can understand, what does it mean? What does it take for someone to have these experiences? Will that be profitable? Probably not, which is why it doesn't happen within our system the way it is. Plus, mm-hmm. we enjoy just judging things as right and wrong and just, you know, not dealing with the issue. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a matter of self-responsibility. When we stay in the strong judgment of right or wrong, we do not take responsibility for the issues that we as a collective have, right? We just say, okay, well, it doesn't necessarily affect me. So therefore, you know, that's just bad. And I'm just going to stay in my little side.
Right.
This idea of non-duality is when you have the meditative, the disconnected experience from just your everyday you, you recognize that that state of being is there. That somewhere within us, we're in a state of being where we don't judge. And so many, like millions of people have had this experience where they mm-hmm. report on this, where they see, you know, all of the things that I think near-death experience cases, there's thousands of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the common things are all these experiences that I thought were so bad were actually just part of my path, that were agreed upon by other people that we played this experience with. And that I had this, and people have these like, wow, I realized the lessons within that. I realized what I learned. I realized what I gained from that. And so again, I think the biggest point of this is that people think it's about condoning. If you don't aggressively trash people who do these things, well, then you're condoning it. And that's not the conversation. We need to bring more nuance into what's happening in our lives. And that's really what non-duality is being able to have a conversation without the polarity and say, how do we really feel about this? And then how do we go about creating harmony? So, and understand and empathize with some of the things that happen in our world that we just don't resonate with, that we don't want to have happen.
Right. And I feel through meditation, that's definitely one way. And you've mentioned a few others that you can see that oneness that happens, even if it's for a brief moment, and it can be so impactful. But a lot of times, you know, some people may hear this and they might just brush it off and say, oh, well, that takes a really beautiful or evolved soul to forgive, you know, someone like that's transgressed them or whatnot. But it is really something that we're all capable of doing on an individual level for the people in our lives and the things that have happened to us. And then also on a collective level for the things that we're hearing now and starting to wake up to. And so you do a whole podcast on this, which I actually listened to and I loved, on raising your vibration. And outside of meditation, what would be some little tips that you could give people listening on how to do that, on how to become more evolved, where you do see things from a non-dual place outside of just consistently meditating or doing spiritual practices like yoga or whatever it is that they do?
Well, meditation is a way of, you know, slowing down the mind, slowing down the day, slowing down the chatter, and connecting within and connecting to a deeper part of yourself, even sometimes just connecting with the body, connecting with the higher self, right? Mm-hmm. So really it's about what experiences in life, what things do I do or I notice I'm in a flow state? I'm in this state where I just feel like there is less chatter. Sometimes people will say, like, when I'm doing my art, for example, I'm not in this state where I'm judging everything and I'm upset and I'm this, that, and whatever. You know, I just kind of am flowing. Well, do more of those things. Do more things where we're connected to a deeper aspect of ourselves, or that we feel like we're in a flow. Obviously, diet and exercise and these sorts of things too, where we're taking care of the body, is building, as long as we don't do it from a judgmental belief system. Again, we're not, okay, I can't eat this because this is so bad and I'll kill myself. Therefore, you know, it's like, okay, what does my body really want to eat? And I'm not talking about my cravings or my you know, this is something you practice in meditation, right? But I'm not talking about my cravings or just my like addictions or desires to something, but like, what does my body really want to eat? And this may take time to explore and to understand and to see how things interact with your body, but we gain more understanding through presence. So when we're eating, okay, so I'm going to try this food that I feel my body wants to eat, that I'm attracted to, like a, let's say a banana or orange or whatever it may be. How does my body react to it? Does it feel bad after? Does it feel, you know, weighed down after? You know, how does it feel? You pay attention. You be present. You become more mindful, right? Mm-hmm. We want a lot of times sort of like these quick fixes that allow us to, all right, do this and you're going to raise your vibration and do that. You know, it's this big picture of ultimately gaining a deeper connection. And a lot of that just comes through the 5 Days You Challenge, for example, is designed the way it is because it's about self-awareness. It's about presence. It's about really paying attention, taking the time to slow things down a little bit, because it's within that, that you start making more authentic choices and you start feeding attention or energy to the authentic you versus the programmed you or the just the ego, or just the ideas, the belief systems or the shadows that are within ourselves that we give a lot of attention to. As soon as they come up, we go, okay, I'll go in that direction. That comes up, I'll go in that direction, right? So it's about when we can practice that authenticity more, we can get into that more, which really just comes through presence and paying attention and reflecting. Yeah. We start to disempower those shadows, or those shadows come up and they say, hey, do you want to address me now? Mm-hmm. This feeling, this experience you had in the past, you want to address me, or this idea of, you know, and we have to aggressively, or sorry, not aggressively, but we have to go after doing that. We have to actually take the time to do that. So yeah. To raise a vibration is address the challenges. When I have emotions come up, when I have feelings come up, talk to somebody about it, address it, you know, see how you might be able to process that stuff, because that changes, that frees up that energy that's coming back and weighing you down and coming back and weighing you down. And it might be scary to deal with, but that'll start to raise a vibration by addressing it and by moving through it with somebody. Looking at the disconnection that we might have with our bodies. Why am I eating so many foods that make me feel weighed down, that are harming things? What is that relationship even saying, where this thing that moves me around, the experience that allows my heart and soul to operate within this experience, why am I not even taking care of it? What's going on there, right? And we address that. And then we start gaining a better connection with the foods that we're eating and how it interacts with us, and paying attention to that. So all of these little choices are really just about ultimately us taking greater responsibility for how everything impacts us, that we do, impacts our environment, impacts others, how we address the different challenges that we have in our lives, and how ultimately, this is the underlying core of everything, be authentic to who we truly are, like deeply, not just the programmed self of who we think we are, but the authentically, truly, deeply self of who we are.
Yes. And I love what you were saying about just being mindful daily and being present and not running from those shadows, because that can be done in so many ways, like bypassing or numbing through weed or alcohol or drugs, TV, like there's just, or food, like you were saying, there's so many ways to run from what's really actually going on. And I usually always ask my guests for whatever their expertise is for quick tips, but I love it's always you and some other guests that have done this work. They're like, there is no quick fix. It's mindfulness. It's every day working on yourself. So I love that you said that so eloquently.
Yeah, it's let's go to the movie The Matrix for a second, because now I know you're a fan and
big fan.
The Matrix is a good example, right? So when you're in the Matrix, when Neo is in the Matrix, right, he's oblivious in a lot of ways. He's making decisions that are, he has a sense that something's off, right? But he's like, I don't really know what's going on. I kind of make choices, kind of just doing my thing, I may not live totally healthily and I'm kind of doing this and that, whatever. The moment you exit the Matrix, right, where as he does in the movie, and suddenly he's like, oh my God, things aren't what I thought they were. He pukes, he goes through this big, mm-hmm. Oh my God, what the heck's going on? But then, he starts seeing things in a different way. And over time, Neo starts to become the one. And it takes a while for him to become the one, right? And mm-hmm. he goes through things that really illustrate that he may not be the one. Even though in the story of the Matrix, he's the one, which really we're all the one. That's the story at the end of the day. There's not one guy. But mm-hmm. the point is it's like he goes through this journey, this up and down that sometimes makes it seem like, ooh, maybe he's not. No, maybe he is. And he's but once you see it and once you start going through that, you have to go through the process. And there's going to be ups and the downs. There's going to be different things. It's not like they just unplugged him from the Matrix and said, Neo, you're the one. And then he was like, oh, you're right. Yeah, okay. That's it. And now he's suddenly, the one, right? It mm-hmm. was a process, and it mm-hmm. took time, and it took a lot of mentorship, and it took, the ability for him to have experiences when he would hop back into the Matrix, right? Have experiences that allowed him to explore more of what it meant to be the one. And this, to us, this is everyday life. We go back into the world after we gain some clarity, and we say, okay, I just had an interesting experience at work where, someone said something to me, but instead of just reacting, I now was kind of like, oh, why did they say that? And why did I get upset? Like, I felt upset, but I didn't fully react. And so now you're examining that experience. And then the next time at work, someone says something, you notice that you didn't even get upset anymore. Maybe, and these are processes, right? It's like in a relationship, you might go from being very self-conscious that your partner might do something to you or do something with another person or whatever it may be. And you hold on to that thinking that that's just who you are, that you're just a, let's say, potentially a jealous person, or you're just a person that's worried all the time about their partner doing something. Well, that's not you. That's a story. And when you deal with that, well, I went through that. I went through that experience when I was younger, mm-hmm. where I was cheated on, and I went through the experience of then having fear of like what someone else was going to do to me all the time. And I'll then, I had two options. I could project that fear and insecurity onto my partner, whoever I was with at whatever given time. And I could have said, okay, well, I got cheated on before. Therefore, I'm always allowed to question everything you're doing. I need to see your phone. I need to see your email. I need to see, well, hold on a second. No one's free in that situation. There is no freedom. There is no, in the truth of the situation is you're never going to be able to stop another person from doing something. Whoever is going to do is whatever is going to do. The only thing you can take care of is yourself. And when I don't mean that in a selfish manner, I mean that you're the only one that can be free of your own pain.
Oh yeah.
I.e., I had to deal with, okay, why am I so insecure? Or what am I worried about? Or what is this? It didn't take that long, a bit of work for a couple of months. And suddenly it was like, it didn't matter what my partner did. It didn't matter. I'm not saying that they were just suddenly going around and sleeping with people and blah, blah, blah. It was more so I wasn't in a state of fear. I was free. Mm-hmm. I was now able to wholeheartedly give myself to the relationship and give myself to the experience, because I'm now free of the stories that were getting in the way. And so ultimately, that's just an example to kind of just show how that through moving through this stuff and through freeing ourselves through the journey that does take time, we become more free, and our interactions change, and the way people see us and are inspired by us, that changes, right? When you live authentically, people see that and go, there's something different about the way you're living and the way other people live.
So beautifully said.
I want to know what that is because you seem to be free and happy all the time, or free and just authentic all the time. And when I hang out with my other friends, they don't. And people will ask questions. And this is how the shift happens. And this is how doing the inner work and then living it is the action. Yes. Because again, people want to say, it's like, oh, well, how do we just take the action? Let's just go riot in the streets and we'll take the action to take down the bad things that are happening in the world. No. That's like a tiny piece to the puzzle, right? We need to do the inner work because it's in these states of being that we need to be in to actually solve the challenges that face us today.
Yes. And it really brings me back to this idea that we are our own saviors. We are the ones, like you were saying, that we've been waiting for. It's not somebody else that's going to do it for us. And it's us on an individual level that does the healing, that creates the change on a planetary or a global level.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was so beautiful. And I just I'm very inspired by your bravery, because it does take a lot of bravery to bring up these issues that will spark these things in people that haven't been healed, and create sometimes triggers for people that haven't been healed so that they can do the healing. I'm sure you probably see a lot of projection your way for these things, but it is such important and amazing work that's really changing the planet in a beautiful way. And I know that this interview will be so inspirational to so many people. So how can people find you and connect with you and watch Collective Evolution TV after this interview?
So we got collective-evolution.com, or just type in Collective Evolution in Google. And, you know, you'll get our articles and so forth that we put out there. You know, we have a mix of stuff these days on CE. It's changed and evolved so much. So there's a mix of stuff in there. But a lot of our attention and work right now is being put into CETV because of censorship, because of demonetization of independent media and so forth. We've put a lot of our energy into CETV, and through video, which is what CETV is. It's a platform similar to like Netflix and so forth, where we have original shows. We have a show that we release. It's almost like a 3-hour news broadcast that goes out every Tuesday and Thursday that really just talks very similarly to the way that we spoke today, but oftentimes we'll use it's all focused in real life examples. So for example, we'll talk about things that are going on in the world, and then we'll unpack, you know, why from a conscious perspective things are taking place, so that we have a greater understanding of it and so that we can actually do something about it from a deeper point of view. And so CETV is our membership area that allows people to do that. If, you know, you want to just see what's going on in CETV and not be part of it yet, you can listen to our podcast, which is essentially the first hour of every Tuesday and Thursday broadcast that we do. So we still do, we cover a topic in its entirety in that first hour. You can listen to that podcast called The Collective Evolution Show on iTunes. You can type in The Collective Evolution Show and find our website where you can download the episodes and so forth. We also have it on Spotify and everywhere else that you find podcasts and so forth. But yeah, we have a whole bunch of different spots to check out our work.
Yeah, and I love also everything that you post on Instagram.
Yes, that's right, Instagram. You know what? See, I'm so bad at social media. I don't ever remember to say, hey, yeah, follow me on Instagram.
I just love your posts. I look forward to the daily posts. And a lot of times they're telling me things that I have no idea are going on. Like, I didn't know a lot of the censorship stuff until you were posting about it. So how can they find you on Instagram?
Yeah, for sure. So Joe Martino 29 is my handle there on Instagram. We also have Collective Evolution on there. You can either search it, or I believe it's at collective_evolution on Instagram. And yeah, we post on the CE account. We post quite a bit. And then I like to kind of throw my own posts up there, usually with like a good daily reflection on each post a couple times a day when I have the time to do it. But sometimes I miss it, so I'm sorry if I do.
Well, thank you so much. This is an amazing interview, and you're truly an inspirational person to look for and to learn from.
Oh, thank you so much. I truly appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk here. And, I think it's an interesting time to be having these discussions. Like, the last takeaway I'll give here is just, we're at a time where these discussions, aside from just the intellectual gymnastics that we see happening in one corner, and the just sort of, sometimes I just like to say sort of the airy-fairy sort of spiritual stuff where we're not sure how to relate it to our world, we need to have these discussions where we look at our world and we say, what the heck is actually going on, and what can we do about it within ourselves, right? And it's an important culture that we have to continue to keep creating here. So thank you for being part of that.
Thanks, Joe. So thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to the Soul Awakening podcast. You'll be notified of our new interviews and episodes that release weekly. You can find all of the episodes online on soulawakeningpodcast.com, on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And please don't forget to leave a review while you're there. If you love the information that you heard today and it sparked something in you, feel free to share it with your friends and your family as well. I'm your host, Kat Fowler. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you on the next episode.